So, the first thing we have up today is a Department of Rehabilitation update. And here to give us that update are Kelly Hargreaves, who just drew a couple of winning door prizes. She is the Chief Deputy Director of the Department of Rehabilitation, and Rosa Gomez, who is the Assistant Deputy Director for Specialized Services Division of Department of Rehabilitation. So at this point, I will turn it over to them to introduce themselves and give us a little information about themselves and give us the Department of Rehab update for today. All right, ladies. Brooks or Ronnie, are one of you guys around to help us? Okay, we got it. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. You introduce yourself and then I'll...
Yes.
We got to love technical difficulties, don't we?
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Judy. And thank you all, everyone who's attending, spending their Saturday afternoon on such a very, very important issue or number of issues that you're here for. Thank you for welcoming the Department of Rehabilitation and inviting us to participate. We see you all as partners and hope that you see us as the same. Just real briefly, I'm going to introduce myself and then have Rosa do that, and then we'll get on to the updates and then a request of you. So I was appointed by the governor to be the chief deputy director last May, so May of 2016. I had already been with the department for 10 years, serving as the chief counsel for the Department of Rehabilitation. But in the last several months, since becoming the chief deputy director, I have really learned so much more about the issues that are out there, including your issues, and I really look forward to working with all of you. The Senate confirmed me, which is a requirement of my appointment, just this week with the help of Rosa, who is by my side here. So I'm very excited to get started. There's a lot of improvements that we're going to make. With that, I'll just turn it over to Rosa to give a little brief bio, and then we'll begin with our updates.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Glad you're able to be here today. So just a brief about myself. I know I've presented before, but for those who may be new, again, my name is Rosa Gomez, and I am the Assistant Deputy Director for our Specialized Services Division. So all those long title really means that within the department, we have a division that is dedicated to serving individuals who are blind and visually impaired, as well as individuals who are deaf and hard of hearing. And under that division, we have five of our programs. We'll be providing some updates on the programs, but that is the Business Enterprises Program, or the Randolph Shepherd. We have the Older Individuals Who Are Blind Program. We have the Blind Field Services Program, Deaf and Hard of Hearing, and where I was the former administrator, we have our Orientation Center for the Blind Program. All fall under this division. And then just briefly for myself, I've been with the department about 8.5 years. As I mentioned, I was the former administrator for OCB. Out of curiosity, any OCB alumni here? Awesome. And then prior to that, I was a counselor out of the Oakland office for Blind Field Services. So I'm going to pass it back to Kelly, and we're going to provide some updates on our national, state, department, and then I'll cover some of our close-to-home specialized services updates.
Thank you, Rosa. Rosa has been just really instrumental in us making improvements to department operations, and I want to just express my gratitude for her. Our director, Joe Xavier, was in Washington, D.C. this week and sends his regrets. He always enjoys working directly with the consumers, former consumers, and stakeholders. And and he looks forward to seeing you in other, with other opportunities to do so. I'd like to acknowledge all of you attendees. Thank you for participating, and as I mentioned, Rosa and I are going to have at least one question for you and hope that you have many questions for us. I'd like to acknowledge our staff. I see Joe Smith. I see Karen Schroeder. I see another hand. Who is that? Nellie. Good to see you, Nellie. I think we had dinner together in San Diego one time, and then Ed Crespin, I see you there too. Thank you, Ed. Good to see you again. So thank you all for spending your Saturday here. We are just really fortunate to be able to be here with you too. Oh, and I think Jeff Tom. Jeff, you're still sort of ours, right? Been really helpful on a number of projects.
Anybody else?
No, I don't think anybody else answered their hand. No, just Nellie had answered, raised her hand. So, as part of my confirmation before the Senate Rules Committee this week, it gave me a really good opportunity to look at the priorities of the department. And maybe like you, we all have far too many priorities than we have resources. So it's really tough to really highlight the things that we want to spend the most amount of our efforts on when everything is important. Among the top three, though, were our commitment to DOR staff. We want to make sure that our staff have the information, the training, the tools, the interpersonal skills that are critical to best serve our consumers. So we have a lot of focus on developing our skills of our staff, investing in them so that they can be more effective. We're not concerned about the heart that our employees have. It's easy when Rosa and I, for instance, spent a day yesterday with some of our staff in here in LA to see their commitment, to know that their careers and their personal interests are in serving people with disabilities. What is sometimes translated doesn't reflect that, however. We recognize that we're a bureaucracy. You know, we're the state government, which is not always known for having person-centered programs. So we are really focusing now on evaluating our programs with the perspective of the people we serve. In order to do that, we need to hear from the people we are serving and have served. And in particular, how can we do that in a way that is not just welcoming to the people who are more typical of those who reach out, which are, you know, in their 30s, but now people as young as 16 years old. So I know that the way that I communicate at 57 years old is not the way that my 17-year-old niece communicates. You know, it's really different. I was just saying to Rosa, I've never even put music on my phone. I use my phone still as a phone, though it has all these features on it. You know, somebody who may have depended on mobility training before has applications on their phone that help them. So perhaps the mobility training today for a 17-year-old is different than Rosa was when she was 17 years old. So we really need to reach out to our youth and make sure that our processes reflect the way that they learn and the way they want to hear from us, in addition to those of us who are a little more seasoned. And another one of our priorities is innovation. So we developed core values or changed our core values in the last year. And two of our core values that are really going to be driving the way we're approaching things this year is our continuous improvement. So we are saying, hey, folks, get used to change because we're not going to settle. We're going to keep improving. And the other one is that we're committed to innovations. Now, innovations can be something really, really big. You know, like the, you know, creation, let's say, of the telephone originally. But it could be small. It could be a new process that when people walk through the door we greet them differently, or we have a new application process, or perhaps we might even do that from the convenience of someone's home with the use of technology. So we're very excited about stepping outside the box, trying to revisit those things that are really a product of maybe years of audits, years of state processes that are really designed to show the public that we are spending wisely. And through all of those years, there are many, many layers that have been added to make sure that there isn't any mistake, that there's not any process where we spent more money where we have to. For example, we were talking yesterday about hearing aids. So a counselor was sharing with us that when she determines that somebody needs a hearing aid, if it's over $5,000 to go through that process, that she's got many, many levels of approval to go through. Now I know that those approval processes were created in part by the state being required to show that we're not spending more money than we should, and that it was all coming from a good place, but somewhere along the line, when we're five or six levels and somebody is going into college next week and they don't have their hearing aid, they don't really care about the five or six levels that were designed to protect the taxpayer dollars. At some point, we became ineffective, and consumers are not getting what they need when they need it. So we are committed to pushing back, to continuing to build the public's trust, to be transparent, and to make sure that we can show the taxpayers that we are only spending money that we need to spend, but we got to rein it in. We got to really look at things from a consumer perspective and then push back where we need to. And we're committed to doing that. Director Xavier and our whole team are committed, because when the counselor experiences that somebody's upset, she's not going to say this gets hung up at another state agency or there's a process where we have to get three bids. It really doesn't matter. It's what the experience is for the consumer. So we got to try to balance that, and we're committed to doing more of that. I want to give you an update on the national level of what is going on. The Council of State Administrators of Vocational Rehab, CSAVR, conducted a self-assessment, meaning the self being all VR agencies nationwide, evaluating what they're doing and giving our own opinion as to what needs to change. And they found that it was pretty consistent with the reputation of VR agencies nationwide, and that people are running really fast. They're working very hard, but we're not making a difference in the 70% unemployment rate of people with disabilities. So something different has to happen. When you're working as hard as you can at home or at work doing something, and no matter what, you're just not making an impact, you got to step back and say, what are we doing that we shouldn't be doing, and what are we doing differently? So at the national level, they too are looking at innovations and saying that to remain relevant, unless we're going to be on the chopping block in the president's budget, we got to be able to really demonstrate that these services are critical. And when the outcomes don't reflect that, it's pretty hard to argue it. So we're not only going to be looking at the innovations, but also how is it perceived? What's our reputation? What does Congress see? Are our congressmen and women going to stand up and fight for us, for our programs, to say they're needed? They will if they have the data behind it and they have the people supporting it. Also on the nationwide level, just even though it's back a few years, there is an impact in the state from the 2014 signing by President Obama of the Achieving a Better Life Act. And you may hear that as the ABLE Act. And that allows persons with disabilities to create savings accounts that will not affect their benefits. So in the past, there was a disincentive to have savings, and now that disincentive is removed for the most part. At the state level, the state legislature adopted the ABLE Act, and it's called CalABLE. That was signed into state law in 2015, but just this year it's getting up and running. We have a member of our executive team, Elena Gomez, who is serving on the ABLE board. It allows people whose disability was who became disabled before age 26 to save up to $14,000 a year without any tax or benefit implications. And it allows up to $100,000 a year in savings overall. $100,000. Your disability had to be incurred before you were 26 years old. So there are, if you go to the state treasurer's website, you can get a little fact sheet about CalABLE, or just Google CalABLE. It's a capital A, capital B, capital L, capital E. And you can get a fact sheet on how that works. As of today, when I looked at the webpage, it said it's still expected to be up and running in 2017, but it didn't say what month. So we can get an update, and we'll probably have a link on it to our webpage to help folks. And so that's really good news. It's the person with a disability as well as their family's savings. Also at the state level, we're in the middle of the budget process, the governor's budget. Just a very slight increase based on our federal grants, increase of total of $457 million for DOR. That is about, I think somewhere along the line, 90% of that is for our vocational rehabilitation services, of which, you know, only 20% of that money comes from the state. The other 80% is a match. We continue to have around 1,800 state employees statewide in around 85 offices. We've been asked about whether that will be affected by President Trump's budget. Some of you may be aware that he's issued what he's called a blueprint for his proposed budget. It identifies certain agencies, government agencies, that will be drastically impacted. The Rehabilitation Services Agency is not called out. There's nothing specific about VR agencies, but there are references to the departments that oversee us. For instance, U.S. Department of Education, as well as Health and Human Services, cuts of between 13% and 18%. That may be zero to us and a greater percentage to others, but we'll continue to watch what's happening. The president releases his budget in May, and of course, by that point, we'll just be on our way to finalizing the state budget. If there are changes at that time, we will, you know, we'll keep all of our stakeholders informed. But at this point, we don't expect to be impacted. We are always looking at ways of, being as efficient as possible. So there's really no program that we would say is fluff. There's really nothing that we can say that there wouldn't be great impact if we were to eliminate. So if that were to happen, we would certainly work with our stakeholders, with the Governor Brown administration, and with our legislators to see if there are state resources that we can use to preserve all of our programs. We also have, you know, two really important grants that we're working on. You probably have heard about these before.
CalPromise is a grant that we received, I think, 3 years ago. What was it, Rose? About $55 million? About $55 million. And that grant, both of our grants are designed and funded entirely by federal funds, and they provide an opportunity for states to do something that could serve as a model for all states. And the CalPromise grant is a grant that asked the states to work with families of children as young as 13 and 14 years old and see, gosh, can we impact kids that early in life so that they are more likely to graduate from high school and either go directly into the workforce or continue on to college. So we are in the last 2 years of that grant. We've signed up a lot of kids. One of the lessons learned is that at least at that age, you're going to be much more successful if you pull in the families, which means not just the caretaker or parents, but also maybe the siblings, and you work with the entire family. So we might see, in a few years from now, see the impact of that with the way we provide services. Our other grant that we received back in October, and which is being administered by the department, but really at our level, Rosa Gomez is serving as the director of that grant, is California Career Innovations. Another grant, this around $5 million that was funded by entirely with federal dollars, and it asks those recipients who won, with us being one of those VR agencies, to look at how work-based learning experiences like internships, summer jobs, school jobs, how might that better prepare high school students for, again, moving on to either the workforce, a good job, or going off to college to prepare for a job. And that has just begun. It's not yet launched. All the administrative steps are being taken care of right now. We have four regions within the state of California. So this works with the local education agencies to recruit kids that are 16 through 21. Thank you. And so we're really excited about that one because we know that that provides kids with an opportunity to not only learn skills and get a jump on their resume, but also to learn the, you know, how to interact with people better. I know that, you know, that was hard for me when I had my very first job. I just didn't know what to do, but, you know, 6 months into it, I kind of got it, and I was less intimidated to apply for a better job. The Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, updates on that, just for those of you who may not know, that act was signed into federal law in July 2014. Most of the provisions of the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act were effective right then, the very day that the president signed it, which included things like you must dedicate at least 15% of your federal funding to serving students. So we're used to the person who's been out of work and working with them to get them a job, and now we're required to spend a big chunk of our grant, existing funds, to not only serve students, but potentially eligible students, and serve them with five different services. So for the sake of time, I won't go through those services, but consider it like VR Lite. VR Lite, just an introduction to a variety of services, which include the work-based learning experiences, self-advocacy, and so that means that something else had to give since we didn't get additional funding. So far, we are able to serve all three of our categories despite having had this additional requirement, but we are adjusting our programs to identify what are the best services for somebody who's 16 years old who may not even be thinking about a career just yet. One last thing that I want to say on the state level is about another thing that we want to ask you about, which is, you know, what is the one thing, so when we are finished giving you the updates, What's the one thing you can give us advice on? What is the one thing that you want to hear about next year that we did? What is the one area that you think we need to focus on? The one suggestion that we do, so we can report back on that to you. Okay, with that, I'd like to turn it over to Assistant Deputy Director Rosa Gomez.
All right, thanks, Kelly. Okay, cute dog. All right, so as Kelly shared, she provided you some brief updates about the Workforce Innovations and Opportunity Act, and I want to provide you some updates specifically around homemaker cases. I know last year when I presented, we were sharing with you that we were waiting for the final regulations to be released, that we had an understanding that, you know, homemaker cases would be not be considered a compensated outcome, and that our focus really needed to be on competitive integrative employment. So with that, as Kelly said, the final regulations were released end of June 2016, and that included that homeworker cases indeed were no longer considered a compensated outcome, and that we were informed that by the end of the fiscal year, June 2017, that homemaker cases would be going away. So the department we continued to open up homemaker plans through August 5th of 2016, and we believe that the ability to provide services to homemaker cases was, we understood that they were extended. So we initially thought it would be 6 months, but we were very pleased that they actually allowed us to extend services for 12 months after the final regulations were released. And these regulations permitted the continuation of services until, as I said, June 30th, 2017, so we're coming up on that. For consumers with uncompensated employment goals on their IPE. So the final regulations do permit, and this is on an exceptional basis, services for homemakers goals to extend beyond June 30th, 2017 if a longer period of time is required based on the individual's needs for the consumers. So, you know, counselors and consumers will be working with each other to identify, you know, what they need, because the whole point is to make sure that for those cases that were opened up, that they will be successful closures. So all consumers whose cases have been closed, rehabilitated, and this is to include individuals with a goal of homemaker, will be able to keep door-issued equipment. So that's really important. I know sometimes people had a lot of fear, oh, does that mean that if I have a homemaker case and you close me, I got to turn my equipment. So if your case is closed successful, to include those homemaker cases that are currently open, you will be able to keep your equipment. So right now, the rehabilitation teams are working with the remaining consumers who have an IPE goal of homemaker to ensure they are receiving the needed services and that their cases are going to be closed successfully. And when we first learned of the final regulations, and in August 2017, when we were opening up the final homemaker cases, we had just over 1,000 consumers with goals of homemaker. Counselors and consumers have been working together, receiving their services, working on closing cases. So right now, we have just under 600 consumers whose cases are still opened up as homemakers. So we have, you know, we're in April, May, June, and by the end of June, these cases will be closed. So there is a concern that department will no longer be providing independent living skills services. And I just want to clarify and let you know that we recognize that independent living skills or daily living skills training, such as orientation and mobility, the daily living skills, and assistive technology training are necessary to support consumers as one of their pathways to achieve competitive integrative employment.
So with this independent living skill training is still being made available to ensure that consumers have the needed skills to move on to their next step, to prepare for obtaining, retaining, or advancing in employment. So again, if an individual comes to the department and they either want to go to work, they want to retain their job, or they're interested in advancing employment, but they need independent skills training to help support this, these services will continue to be provided. So moving forward, if an individual contacts the department for services, but they are not interested in employment, so they kind of wanted the homemaker goal services, we will be providing referrals to individuals in their local community so that they can receive services through those local community programs. We do recognize that there is concerns around gaps in services, so we do want to share an existing program that has been around to help support individuals who are not interested in obtaining employment, and this is the personal goal services. So personal goal services are available and still an option. These services are non-vocational, specialized services provided to individuals who are blind or visually impaired and who are not VR consumers, and they also do not intend to seek employment. It's to assist an individual to achieve independence in their home and or community. So in order for an individual to qualify for the services, the personal goal services, they must be, again, not interested in employment, and they must also not be a consumer of the department. The individual must also qualify as an individual who is blind. The individual must be at least 18 years of age and a California resident, and that they don't have the intention of moving out of California, and that that we're able to demonstrate that there is a need for this personal goal services, and that the individual will be able to benefit from the personal goal services. So, you know, it's pretty I think flexible to meet individual needs. It's general funds, so it's state funding. It's $150,000, so it's not a large amount. The idea is that the service is kind of quick, that an individual would come up for a service that maybe they need a piece of technology. You know, it's a limited amount, so, you know, if we have people showing up and they need something, you know, $50,000, that's not going to go very far. So oftentimes individuals, you know, they're kind of lower cost, and that allows for multiple individuals to be able to receive these benefits or benefit from this program. So with that, as homemaker cases are going away, we really need to be shifting our focus as you know, we've been told by the federal government, supported by RSA, and as we've shared before, you know, we have 70% unemployment amongst persons with disabilities, and this number has been the same, even with, you know, the passing of the ADA. It's still at 70%. So what, you know, we've been told is we're not making a difference. You guys need to do things differently. And so we've been tasked with the release of the Workforce Investment Opportunity Act that we need to look at how we're doing business and make those changes. So with that, Blindfield Service District is developing strategies to outreach and assist individuals who are currently employed but at risk of losing their jobs because they're losing their vision. So we have a focus on assisting individuals with job retention. WIOA also emphasizes that we just don't need to get somebody into, you know, a low-paid, low-entry job. They really want us to focus on that individuals have the capability to advance in their field, that we want to make sure that individuals have career jobs. And so there is an emphasis and support for individuals to be able to advance in their field. So for example, if they're currently working but they have opportunities to promote, and maybe they need some assistance from the department, that they can reach out and get signed up and work with their counselor to help identify what they need to support them advancing in employment. As Kelly mentioned, we are also focusing on increasing our work with younger individuals. So we can, right now it says as young as 14 years of age, that we can start working with them to provide services to help prepare them. So kind of those pre-employment services, getting them on the road. You know, working with the young people, letting them know that we have this expectation that they're going to work, and that we're going to help pave that path for them and to support them through the process. So our Blind Field Service District is working to support our young people, working with their local schools, identifying where are these young individuals. As Kelly mentioned, that this also involves us having a better understanding on how to engage with youth, what do they need, and what can we do in our Blind Field Service District to be more open, receptive, welcoming to supporting our youth. So those are some of the efforts that we are working on within Blind Field Services. So I now want to move to our Older Individuals Who Are Blind program. I think it's important that we discuss this program because I think that there were some concerns and misconceptions out there that the Older Individuals Who Are Blind program is affected by the WIOA. To let you know that this program is separate from homemaker cases. So for those individuals who don't know about this program, the Older Individuals Who Are Blind program is it's a grant that we provide funding to 22 programs throughout the state to support individuals who are 55 and older. So the programs may be blind and visually impaired programs as well as independent living programs. And there's funding that's given to these programs to provide support so that individuals can live independently in their community and maintain their homes and continue living in their homes. So services through the OIB program are continuing, and there is no impact to the program by WIOA. In 2016, the OIB programs statewide received an additional $3 million, which was divided up evenly amongst all the 22 OIB programs. So this meant that each program received an additional $150,000 on top of their regularly grant funds. And then these additional funds, programs focus on capacity building and on services to address the potential homemaker gaps. Okay? And then lastly, I want to talk a little bit about the Blind Advisory Committee. And I'm curious to know, is there anybody here on the committee? Awesome. Great. Who's that? Oh, hi, Chris. Hi, Mitch. Great. Wonderful. So, to tell you a little bit about the Blind Advisory Committee, this is a committee that was established to provide advice to the Department of Rehabilitation on means to increase competitive employment, enlarge economic opportunities, and to enhance independence and self-sufficiency, methods for employing persons who are blind or visually impaired. And then the department, director, and that's Joe Xavier, in support of a diverse memberships, appoints representatives of specific groups to a four-year term. And then members appointed are interested in and members are interested in representative of Californians who are blind or visually impaired. And the Blind Advisory Committee, right now we have one vacancy, and this is for a representation for service providers of the blind and visually impaired. And we have we are in the process of recruiting to fill this seat. And this recruitment effort has been extended through May 26th. So if you are an individual or if you know somebody who you think might be have a great voice to come and be a part of the committee, to be able to share their ideas and how they can support the community and to be able to advise the department on how we can better serve consumers, we really strongly encourage that you will apply. All right, so that's all I have in terms of our updates for specialized services. And I'm going to turn it back to Kelly.
Okay, so here's we only have 5 minutes left. Because no, are you good?
Okay. Actually, we are going to go ahead and let this go over a little bit. So if you have something else to say, and then we will make sure to have time for questions.
Okay, so this is the part where you stump us. Stump us with one of your questions. Uh-oh, Mitch is standing up. Except for Mitch. Anybody other than Mitch, if you have a question. And then besides that, Rosa and I would love some ideas to talk about on the plane back to Sacramento. The one idea of, or the one suggestion of an area of focus that we should have. So I'm not sure how are you coordinating the questions? Because
do we have a volunteer in the room that would be able to run a mic?
Ronnie.
Is that Ronnie?
Great. Yeah, it's right here.
So
how about if we just have Ronnie run around just without a mic?
As the mic is coming around, I just want to share that, you know, one of the things that our big emphasis, and I think Kelly spoke about this, is that we need to be innovative. We need to start thinking out of the box, doing things different. You know, we're, 2017? So, you know, we've come a long way since the department first started. And with that, you know, we want to hear from the community. What do you need? What are some suggestions that you can share with us that you would like us to focus on as part of being innovative so that we can really, you know, think about reaching out to the young individuals, making sure that we are providing effective services, and to be able to meet the needs that we, you know, we are aware that, you know, when we say we're from the Department of Rehabilitation, we get condolences and, you know, people make comments. So we are not naive to, there are some individuals who don't feel that, you know, that we're doing our best. And we want to focus on strengthening the work we're doing because we want to be our best. And with that, we want to hear how we should focus. And you know, we're not wanting this to be, I mean, there's a lot we can complain about and then we'd be here all day and tomorrow, right? But really we want some suggestions on how you think we can focus. If you were to give us like, hey, I'd like for you to focus on this or, you know, strengthen that. So those are the things that we're kind of looking for that so we can have some takebacks and we can work on developing some innovative teams to really strengthen what we're doing.
Go, Ronnie, go. That's a live mic. This is Mitch Pomerantz, and I thank you, Rosa, for acknowledging the Blind Advisory Committee. I want to say to the folks who are here, there are 4 CCB members on the BAC. 2 of us, myself and Jason Holloway, are specifically representing the council. Chris Fendrick is the education representative. He, as a teacher, as a TVI, has that background. Deborah Thompson up in Sacramento is the 4th CCB member, and I am blanking out on the constituency Deborah represents. But I want to say At large, okay. And I want to say to the folks here, yeah, the department hears complaints all the time. And this year, I was just elected chair, and between myself and Brian Basham, who's NFBC representatives, they hear a lot of our concerns. But I am available to the CCB membership. If you have issues or concerns that you want brought to the department's attention, I want you to contact me. Or Jason, but I'm not going to speak for Jason because he's not in the room. But I am available by phone, via email, if you have specific issues or concerns to bring to the attention of the department. I will do so through the auspices of the Blind Advisory Committee. Also, let me say very quickly, Kelly and Rosa, there are now only, I think, two agencies in the Southern California area providing OIB services, Dale McIntosh Center, Center for the Partially Sighted, which in CPS's case, well, but the OIB specifically, and CPS is going through some issues, some changes right now. We, I think, really need more assistance down in this area to address the large number of older blind persons who need rehab services.
Thanks, Mitch, for sharing that information. I think that's really important, and I know, so we have a section within the department called Community Resource Development, and so we'll definitely share this information and pass that on to that section, as we are always wanting to make sure that we have really strong resources, so our service providers, and especially for the blind community.
And Mitch, thank you for your service on the Blind Advisory Committee, especially in that big role of chairperson.
Hello, my name is David Jackson, and I'm curious as to what the agency is doing for older workers. You may have spoken about this earlier, and maybe I didn't catch all of the information. But what is the agency doing for older workers who want to continue working and who feel as though they still want to contribute to the society? I, for one, do want to continue working. I look forward to getting up every day and trying to apply my skills and my trade. But I'm at the point now where I'm needing some assistance. And I was kind of thinking that perhaps reaching out to get more information would be helpful. But this isn't just about me. It's also about how do seniors or older workers get assistance because they want to work.
Yeah, that's a great question. And so I shared that one of our focus is on job retention. So one of the things that we're working on is reaching out, making a stronger effort to reach out to employers, even to unions, and letting them know about the department's commitment to supporting individuals so that they can retain their jobs. I'll share a story that was shared with me that there was an individual who went to his union and said, "Hey, I'm losing my vision. Can you, help me? What should I do?" And he was told, "Don't tell your employer, because if you tell your employer, you might lose your job." And that is just such an awful, misconception. And so we want to get out there and let people know that, it really is important to share with your employer. It helps to protect an individual because it's, a protected class, and that also there are services. The Department of Rehabilitation can assist an individual who is in the process of losing their vision or has lost their vision so that they can retain their job. And again, that also speaks to, and as we get older and wiser and have a lot of work experience, we want to